And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 107. I'm Silas Lindenstein here again today with Samantha Rund.
Hey, hey.
Samantha and I are joined today by the wonderfully talented Matt Jorgensen, composer. Well, how do I introduce you? What's your title? What's the music title?
I always say composer and drummer. My tagline is I write music, I play the drums.
I feel like there should be like a sir or something. Like, I don't know.
I'm not there yet.
Just no.
Maybe after my third British.
You're going to like knight him, but using drumsticks.
Yeah. Ooh, that could happen. Yeah, I can see it. Let's do it. I got a sketch.
That's something.
Matt joined us today. Back to the format, regular format, or not the regular, but the new one we started, and then riots started everywhere. he joins us to talk about the hot topic, Starbucks, going back and forth between the Black Matters gear, Hollywood. What should they do with dealing with COVID in future media creations? We talk about the Flash actor getting fired. We talk. We get into a little bit of nerd news, but we kind of delve into, we get a big discussion about some of Samantha and I's feelings about.
Yeah, there's a little bit of surprising emotion came up. Yeah,
right. We got nerd news, and that this firing of the Flash, it's sending ripples around the multiverse, really, and it hit us in the multiverse. And we talked about that. So some nerd news stuff that's coming out. Series of the week, podcast, not podcast. I do suggest a podcast on there. Want you to check out. And post of the week. And then we talk about Matt Jorgensen and his story, how we got started and to be in a. I met Matt. We mentioned this on here, but he was the composer for my last. Or my most recent 48-hour film project, GA, award-winning film. If I haven't said that enough on here, Matt, where can people look you up your music if they want to check you out, see if you're right for their film?
MattJorgensen.com, JORGENSEN, or just Google me. I usually come up at the top. And also we do Origin Records, and if you're free in May 2021, if there's a vaccine, come to the Ballad Jazz Festival.
Nice.
Was it May 2021? Was that one?
It was supposed to be this past May, but we had to cancel it.
Okay.
And then it's supposed to be in November, but I don't know if that's going to happen, but it will, you know, hopefully May next year.
Okay. Ballad Jazz Festival runs that. So, like, our budding jazz musicians who want to try to get into a festival, should they try, or is this like the elite?
I mean, we have people. I canceled on like 100 people last May, so I kind of owe them a gig the next one. But, you know, well, you can talk about 2022.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping. I just got the cancellation notice for Emerald City Comic Con, that they're not going to go ahead in August like they were hoping. They had postponed it. And so I'm still waiting to hear whether that means just automatically we're in next year, or what's going to happen with that, with the Real Nerds of Comedy Show. I don't know. So everything's going to be interesting for the next year of like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? I don't know. What's Hollywood going to do? Those are the questions we ask here on Black and a Half. Today's episodes. Let's see. We want to thank our new Patreon member, Tara Widener. Thanks to Stefan Ward, our founding Patreon member. If you want to become a Patreon member of Black and a Half, it's a great way to support this show and all its production costs. Please go to Patreon, patreon.com/Black and a Half. If you don't want to become a Patreon member, if you're boycotting Starbucks or something, you know, what are you going to do with those $8 a month, you can become a Patreon member. It'd be great and support us. You can't get your black coffee, get your black and a half podcast. Also, right.
If you're not getting your black half and half, get your black and a half.
That's right. Ah, she's got a commercial. Also, to support the show, if you could go to iTunes maybe and subscribe, like, share, and share this post with all your friends. Tell a friend to tell a friend. And today's episode's brought to you by Silas Gets Real at Skyline Properties. If you're looking to buy or sell a home in the state of Washington, please give me an email and I'll hook you up with me. You can get me at silas@blackandahalf.com. And also, if you are looking to buy a home, you can check out the sister podcast of this. You're buying a home at yourbuyingahome.com. And today's episode is also brought to you by
Samantha. Oh, thank you. Yes. So I'm getting to work on this new animated short. The first two episodes are out, but check out the first episode first. It's called Max and Friends. And episode one, The Adoption. Max and Friends, episode one, The Adoption. If you just want a laugh, like a cute little animated short, it is short. It's just a few minutes long. So check it out. And then
where do we check that out?
Oh, on YouTube.
Okay.
On YouTube.
And type in just Max.
Max and Friends.
Okay.
Episode one.
Okay. So you're saying we should watch episode one first, though.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, that's a choice. That's an interesting way to go. So,
I mean, you could go to episode two, but it's not going to make as much sense with that episode one.
Okay. I see it. I see it. It's a way.
Yeah.
Okay. And also, brought to you by
Beyond Technique Coaching. So if you're looking for a performance coach to help you use performance techniques to empower your life on or off stage, check it out on Instagram, YouTube. I just posted one of my favorite performance tips to help alleviate nervousness, and so that can easily be found at Beyond Technique Coaching at youtube.com. working on the website for that still.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. Samantha is an elite actor, as you may know from her performance on the award-winning GA. fine there. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for supporting and bringing us all the way here to episode 107. You, the fans, are what make this all possible. So here we are, episode 107, Matt Jorgensen.
Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by to receive our transmission. Stand by, stand by, stand by, stand by. Join us. Impressive. Join us. Impressive.
You know, I was not a Starbucks person for the last, until like the last 6 months.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I mean,
last 6 months before quarantine, or are you including this?
I guess maybe I'll need to include maybe like 3 months before quarantine.
How did that happen?
I don't drink coffee. So I never had a reason to go in there, really. I mean, I'd get the occasional like hot chocolate or whatever. My wife likes Starbucks, but it was I've always seen it as a money saver. And then I discovered, it all comes down to me discovering Thai iced tea.
Okay. I was wondering how you got turned.
Yeah. Like, and I was like, this is amazing. And so I was trying to get Thai iced tea places. They don't make Thai iced tea at Starbucks. It's not an option.
Okay, I didn't think so, because that'd be dangerous.
I could do like, a little milk. I could get cream or a little, like a tiny bit of cream and get close to the flavor, like just the consistency of it. And from there, I just started doing like iced tea, like black iced tea. venti black iced tea. That's my drink. To where my kids, my Willow will say, "Daddy, can we go to Starbucks and get a venti iced black tea?" Like that's she so wants cute. Me to get one because sometimes they get cake pops. That's why, to be honest.
It doesn't really matter what Willow said. I'd still be like, "Oh, so cute! She's so freaking adorable."
But so I've never had a big yeah. So now I'm spending way more at Starbucks than I ever have, and I got an app. I got the app, so I can get points, and it's
because it becomes like it's like a video game now. Because you know they'll have double point weeks. You just wanna. You want to rack them up.
Yeah. So, hey, we get into hot topics here. The first thing in the hot topic section was actually the guys familiar with the Starbucks Black Lives Matter controversy?
I've heard a bit of it. I've seen some stuff.
Okay. So Starbucks initially said, as everyone started to dress up at work and stuff, said, no, you can't wear some Black Lives Matter stuff. Don't be throwing stuff on your uniform. And from a memo, and they got a huge backlash on it. And so now they've said now, like, oh, we're actually making stuff for it to send to everybody to wear. And I guess, and I'm curious, do you believe them? Do you believe that they were going to do it anyway? Because they kind of said they were going to do it anyway.
You want to weigh in? I'll let you weigh in first.
I tend to think in corporate America that they try and do better. Uh-huh. And so I was inclined to give the benefit of the doubt. And then somebody pointed out that there was the whole issue of black guys getting arrested inside the Starbucks for having meetings. So then I was kind of like, well, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's one of those missed opportunities because, you know, no matter what now they lost it right at the beginning. And I think it's great. I mean, I think it's great that they're, you know, I think it's great for everyone to try and do better. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the initial thing, I don't see what the initial big deal was if people wanted to wear, a button or a t-shirt. I mean,
Starbucks is pretty regimented on what you can wear.
They were. I mean, and I speak of somebody who got a job at the fifth Starbucks to ever open New York City. Okay. So, it was used to be khakis and black polo shirts. And, but now it's kind of like, I think that you can pretty much wear what you want there.
Really? From what I was reading was that people were saying, no, you have to wear approved stuff, no extra things, except during Pride Month, which is approved Pride gear, like pins that they send to all the stores.
I did read something similar to that. And so that's the part where it's harder for me to give instant judgment, you know, because it's like, okay, the way things can go with uniforms and blah, blah, blah. Was that honest? I don't know how the original memo came out, though, because I didn't read the original memo. So if it came out just saying, hey, you guys can't wear this, that's one thing. But if it said, hey, you guys can't wear this, we are working on standardized thing.
They didn't say we were working on it.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, that's the part that seems suspect because it was left out.
Yeah,
because
they could have said early on, like, oh, and we're working on it.
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder if, like, you know, whoever was supposed to send it would forget to put it in. And then the like boss is like, are you freaking nuts? You idiots.
Right.
But then they can't say that we're in. Oh, it's because I have an incompetent secretary. They can't do that.
Right. It's hard to know. Like I want more details, but I'm definitely suspect like it's great. The shirt's coming out and all that, but also what else are they doing for social change? Like, now, where is the money going?
Okay. So here's, Matt, what you brought up, someone else brought up to me about the whole, they were like, oh, don't you remember when they arrested black people in Philadelphia? Now I do want to cover that a little. Now, remember that was one store. One store.
Yeah.
Okay. That was not, it's not a corporate decision to arrest black people at Star hanging out at Starbucks. And because, well, okay, a couple of things actually. One, because of that incident, they closed every store.
Every store, yeah.
Every store for sensitivity training. And I actually thought it was the same. My memory got sliced here, and I actually thought it was closer. A couple years before that, Starbucks was the only, the corporate, they were the only corporation to do this. Who, remember, they had this failed, like, let's talk about race campaign,
right,
where they were like, oh, just come up and talk to the cashier about race and how we could improve race relations or what's going on. And they were just like, they, it was just a very dumb campaign idea. I mean, it was a good spirit, but they actually realized that it was a bunch of white people who thought about it and were like, oh yeah, that was horrible. We were, well, we shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
It is a good, it is a good, in good, a good, intention, but if, depending on who the baristas are,
yeah,
who's getting asked those questions repeatedly.
And they didn't think about, yeah, they didn't think about some things thorough, which is that now they have actually more of a diverse committee trying to work on things like that. So I, what, one, so yeah, I think they, I did, if they didn't plan it before, I think they did screw up. But I do want to give, and I realize they're local, so I'm biased and I'm addicted to their iced tea now, so I can't boycott. But I do want to say they were ahead of the curve as far as corporations actually wanting to address the issues. Like, they were like, you know, there's some systematic racism going on. We should probably address this. And everyone was like, fuck you, we don't want to talk about it. Like, that was, that was it. So I do want to, I'd like to say, hey, Starbucks, you failed.
I think it's one of those things where hopefully, you know, even if you make a misstep, you hopefully can be, you know, responsible enough to kind of correct it and do some change. And I think that, I mean, I, speaking from my own time at Starbucks, you know, when I was there part time as a struggling jazz musician in New York City, you know, they gave health insurance, which was rare. Yes. No one did that.
Yeah.
And they provide, you know, college and, or, you know, if you want to go to the online college and stuff like that. So, you know, I mean, it, I think it goes hand in hand with what we saw on Capitol Hill. You know, I was reading the article earlier today, the Trader Joe's, which they said, you know, we're going to close at 1 o'clock because the large majority of our staff wants to go to the Black Lives Matter rally.
Right.
And the next day, corporate Trader Joe's closes the store for good. And what message does that send? I mean,
exactly. And, oh, now that's something else too. Like, I don't know, for those that don't know, that corporate Capitol Hill, Trader Joe, well, they're all corporate, I guess. They've also apparently been trying to unionize. And it sounds like Trader Joe's was very scared of them all, like, oh, we've organized to go to a rally together. And they're like, oh crap, they got stuff going on. We need to shut that down. Again, maybe not thinking the implications of but you just did it with the Black Lives Matter march. Now it's going to look like,
wait, they shut down the store?
It's closed permanently.
No.
Indefinitely.
Okay, I cannot bear to have any bad news about Trader Joe's on top of this dumpster fire of what's the world going on. Like, I freaking love Trader Joe's, and I sure hope that they do not disappoint me.
It's very strange. Like, the two companies that I know, some people that listen to this hate Starbucks passionately because of what they did to the Sonics, the owner did.
I understand that.
Yeah. And just because of the controversy about way coffee's produced and whatnot. But I don't drink the coffee, so I'm okay. My hand is clean.
Your conscience is clear with
as
that one.
As long as those cake pops are not made by 12-year-olds, I'm probably okay.
What if they're 10-year-olds? What do you got against 10-year-olds?
Well, you know, they can fit places better.
Oh man.
Okay, and then here's a question. So we are now looking at movies are going to start opening this month. June 26th, I saw an actual movie that I might want to see. So like, oh, it's coming to the theater. They're starting to release movies now. Hollywood is being deemed film to be an essential service, so they can start producing again. And my question I have for you two is, should Hollywood ignore COVID in the future things they're making? Well, as they make these contemporary, obviously it doesn't matter if it's a historical piece, even far future, but there's a lot of sitcoms that take place right now. Do you think they should jump the timeline? Should they ignore it? Where does will TV be escapism if they mention it? Like, what do you think? What are your thoughts on Hollywood and COVID in the, as they start making stuff now?
So you mean in terms of the storyline, not in terms of their safety practices?
Yes, that'll be one. That'll be a whole separate issue.
Okay, okay.
What do they ignore it in the worlds of the movies?
I think there will be a mix. I hope that there will be a mix, because Lord knows I don't want to have to turn on the television and every single second see something COVID related. But I also don't want to turn on the television and see no acknowledgement. So I think that, you know, just like now there's a mix of some shows that are talking about social issues that are, you know, present day versus, you know, future or past or this or that. I'd like there to still be a mix.
Okay.
I think, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting how it plays out. I think in some ways it's going to, like, I was looking on, there's a Netflix has a show in development called, I forget, it's Social Distancing is the name of it. And it's by, it's by the production team from Orange is the New Black, but it's all filmed. It's all, everyone's filmed by themselves and they're assembling it. Right. So it's now, it's like literally filming now.
Yeah.
But I think what we're going to see is, we're going to see a bunch of like relationship movies in the next year to 18 months to 2 years, because as Hollywood ramps back up, you know, there's all the protocols that have gone into how they can film and how many people can be on set. So you can't shoot and you can't make you might be able to make like a Marvel movie, but you can't make a movie with a lot of extras fighting, you know, so it's all like the type of movies that are getting greenlit now, which we're going to see in the theater a year or 2 years from now, are all going to be very intimate type stories, I think.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, they're going to have a small cast.
True. I sure hope that they don't start doing CGI actors other than like if it's a video game or something, but that's still motion capture a lot of the times with an actual actor too. And I suppose an actual actor will do the voice, but I read an article a while back. I don't know if you guys saw it, but it was saying CAA, that like big agency signed an AI or a virtual actor.
What?
Yeah. I saw an article and, you know, maybe I want to look it up because it's been a while and I'm like, are you kidding me?
Onion article?
They took our jobs. The computer took our jobs. How do you sign a
virtual? someone's voice has to be there, right?
Well, that's what I was thinking. I was like, okay, well, at least hopefully there's still going to be an actor or human.
Did you fall for a Monty Python skit? Did you?
Right? No. Here, wait. I'm going to look it up.
I will say it's not on the topic list, but my wife has not laughed so hard as when I was telling her last night how Fox News reported a Reddit article about what was happening on Capitol Hill. And it turns out it was a joke they didn't get from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, that somebody was just quoting that. And it was,
yeah,
it was delightful and humorous. You got it?
It says CAA has signed Lil Michaela, a CGI character who also acts. 19-year-old Brazilian-American model, musical artist, and influencer with over 1 million Instagram followers. Oh, and she's completely computer-generated. That's right. You read that right. She's not quote-unquote real.
Wait, she's on Instagram?
She's an avatar puppeteered by an LA-based startup of engineers, storytellers, and dreamers who specialize in artificial intelligence and robotics.
Holy crap.
I always think those things are a non-issue. I mean, it's great. I mean, I'm sure like my kids are my teenagers would probably know about that or one of those things. But at the end of the day, I pay for everything, right? Yeah. So like, it's,
I ain't paying for those digital actors.
Yeah. I'm sure it's fine. It's like the AI thing in my realm of doing music. There's always like, you know, they're working on AI programs. You can type in the mood that you want and you type in what kind of music you want and you'll get something and it sounds great, but it sounds good. It's never great, yeah. Right? It'll never bring you to tears. It's never like one of those hair on your arms. It's all because it's always based on stuff in the past. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I get what you're saying. It like there's the human element that's needed for that sort of magic.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, I think you're
especially,
right.
Especially now, right? I mean, when everyone's stuck at home, it's like you want a connection in everything because we don't have that while we're all isolated. So,
yeah,
I think I'm already like when film actors decided that they could just do TV or whatever the hell they want to do, that's. When it became harder to work, I was reading about the whole like how Robin Williams changed animated films by being one of the first big stars to do one and how it's hard to get a job, it's hard to get in one without being famous again. Now, like they used to hire people they were just voice actors or just they weren't known otherwise. And now everyone is filled with these big casts of known actors and, so it just always seems like there's like this 1,000 ways that they're avoiding discovering somebody to put on, you know, an unknown. It seems so hard, like as an actor now, like you're in your, especially after you're 30, to like suddenly just, oh, they're going to just discover me. Like, no, they want to groom them when they're young. Otherwise we're going to get some old actor to come fill this role.
And now my favorite story about the voice acting things was when I was on tour in Germany, right? So my friend who was German in the band, and we were watching a movie and you know, they have all the American movies over there, but they overdub them. They overdub all the dialogue. And so if it's a Tom Hanks
overdub,
they'll do a German voice dub of the American movie.
Okay. Is that just dubbing? Cause you said overdub.
Right, dubbing. Right. Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
I was like, is that something extra? Like, overdub?
Yeah. So there's not subtitles. It's like you're watching the film in, you know, German. Like you can flip on Netflix, right?
Okay.
But he was telling me that, like, so like Tom Hanks has the same voice actor in all the Tom Hanks movies.
Oh.
So it's the same German guy.
And that's pretty cool.
That's the greatest gig in the world, right?
Yeah. I mean,
once you get it, your career, your trajectory of your career is just based solely on like Tom Hanks. Or the flip side would be Tom Hanks decides he wants to retire and this guy in Germany is just like, what? No, I got like a wife and three kids, college. You can't retire now.
What about Mel Gibson's voiceover actor who was just, oh, everything's great. And then he got racist and it doesn't do anything. Especially in Germany. They're like, oh, yeah, no, we can't dump a thing about the Jews. Okay. All right. Okay. Well, moving from Hot Topics, actually, we're going to head over to actually our social post of the week. This one is a Facebook post from Ben Lucas that was shared for me. As he was talking about the... Confederate statues kind of getting pulled down. And of course, every time that happens, people start complaining about it. And I didn't feel like it needed to be a hot topic because I don't think anyone here is going to argue why they should stay or something. I think maybe how fast to yank them down. But like what Ben Lucas here had to say. You've probably seen the post floating around, so here are some more things that lasted longer than the Confederacy. Pokemon Go lasted longer and involved three times as many Americans. The Microsoft Zune was in production longer than the Confederacy. Squeeze-Its juice bottles lasted four times longer than the Confederacy. Saved by the Bell aired longer than the Confederacy existed, and that's not even including the college years or syndication. It's not heritage. It's racism. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah. Well said.
Yeah, the length of time. I was actually kind of surprised as I was thinking about that. I was like, oh yeah, it was actually a pretty short amount of time when you look at it through our future.
How long? I was asked that at dinner, how long the Confederacy lasted. Do you have it up there?
As someone who just brought this up, you would think I would have that at the tip of my fingers.
What's up, Silas? This is my job on the podcast. My job is to be like, I don't know, let me look it up. Your
job. You should have. How come you didn't? You shouldn't see me struggling there, and Sam could have just typed real fast and texted me. Well, Confederate States. See, now it wants all of this. Why isn't Wikipedia? Okay, Confederate States of America lasted CSA. Oh my gosh, from 61. Well, the war began on 61, so about then to 65. So. Yeah, 4 years.
Not long.
Yeah. Pokemon Go. Anyone can bring that up. Okay, now we got nerd news. And that's when the music comes in that I do, right? My imaginary nerd news. nerd news. I don't know what it should be. People need to vote on that. What's gonna happen with it? Hartlett Sawyer, for those Flash fans of the CW show Flash, which Sierra, my eldest daughter, and I we're behind regularly. One of the characters on there, Mr. Stretch or whatever they call him, he's been fired for some old tweets. He's made some offensive, they're misogynistic, maybe a little racist. They were when he was very much younger. He's apologized for it. I will say he did. This was actually one of the most humblest reactions to him. I think he was.
Did you read those? Sorry. Continue.
Well, yeah, I read them, but like Samantha, as an open mic, as somebody who goes to open mics and listens, nothing was shocking to me.
Oh my God. Yes, it was to me. Some of them were beyond disturbing, beyond disturbing. Like, you don't even make a comment like that as a joke.
Like, do you not listen to other comics at open mics?
I have not heard a comic make a joke about cutting off somebody's body parts to help them, like, you know.
Oh.
That was like disgusting.
Maybe am I that old that I've heard those?
I've heard some bad jokes, but yeah. Like that was, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, they're rough. 2012, some of them were. But he said, you know what? He said, I'm sorry I did that. And he even said, you know, they were humor was not an excuse for that. Like, he fucking owned it. Like, for the first time, I've never seen. Usually you say, I was joking. I was joking, guys. Relax.
Or the non-apology apology.
Well, yeah. Sorry, I mean, like, the question is, what, how does somebody recover from that?
Recover? Like,
yeah. Well, because you're saying it's like, if the person didn't physically harm somebody and incite violence and they apologize, then how are they rehabilitated?
Oh yeah, I think we've talked about that before on here.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, because what's fascinating about this is, so he said that like friends of his basically like had an intervention to kind of explain how, dude, these aren't cool. These things, the way you think, isn't cool. And he apparently has grown as a person, much like his character on the show Flash. Like the show Flash, he was a horrible, like, crooked cop to start with. And he kind of grows from that into a superhero. He like actually becomes a good person. And hold on. Just bend it down. So it was kind of interesting that it's actually grown. And like, normally I would almost be fine. Like, they fired him, big deal. But I was kind of like, oh, he actually seems like he actually grew as a person and was better now. But this show is so, and the CW itself with the superhero show are so progressive and forward thinking. And I mean, shouldn't even be progressive. It should just be normal, right? At this point.
Yeah.
But like, their shows are the only shows that have regular, you know, gay characters that were that are just regulars, and it's just it's very normal. Everything is normal. Well, I know there's other shows, but
okay, yeah, it's like they're not the only show.
If you watch CW, like every issue, they have one of the few shows that's mainstream to the audience that has a trans woman in it.
Mm-hmm.
She's also playing a trans, the first trans superhero, who, which is a real thing. Now, they didn't invent the superhero, but the superhero existed, but it was a trans superhero as well. Like, they've just been so forward, and watching with my daughter, I've been like, holy crap, I never saw things this not edgy, but this
normal.
Like, TV's always seems to be like 5 to 10 years behind, right? On what they're not afraid to show. They're like, oh, if everyone's okay with interracial stuff now, we'll play with it in 5 years. Then we'll have different strokes go on. So it was just a little sad. I'm like, you got to own the past. I don't get why he didn't delete them.
I thought he did delete them, but somebody had archived them or somebody had seen them.
Was that what happened?
I read it.
I'm purging everything the second I have an audition. I have an audition for a major show. I'm going through, unless I'm announcing a show I was on, I'm deleting everything. I don't know what I'll be offended by.
Yeah, I went and looked at him, and it's one of those moments where I just realize I'm just like old middle-aged dude, and I don't know what's going. Like, I read it, and I was just like, yeah, this is horrible. It's not even funny. I don't know if it was trying. Like, if you're trying to make it funny, how is that even possibly funny?
He was talking about kidnapping somebody and, you know. Yeah. Doing terrible things to them, that's just sick.
Yeah,
I mean, he apologized, he grew great, to be honest. I'm not sure that I believe it,
because
not inviting him for dinner.
So what do we do with him? Do we just ban him from Hollywood for good, or is there anything he can do?
Well, there has to be something he can do, because, you know, I don't, like, he didn't kill anybody or rape anybody or anything like that, right? I mean, his words were not good,
right?
But it's not to the same level of a offense.
What would your advice be to him now? Should he go on a tour? Should he?
I don't know. I think what he might want to do is move out of the country and start afresh. Get a secret identity.
Well, your career's over,
and just
but you
clean
have to
slate.
Go to another country now.
No, it's horrible. What's the kind of rehabilitation he would do? Like some sort of therapy and community service, or
I think the something. Second he was cast as a regular, he should have started. He should have dove in to every like charity related to be like, start making amends now. And then so like not to wait till he's caught. Like, I don't know if he's like seeing how far can I go in the show before they find my old tweets and just.
Well, and also here's another thing that I've been thinking of is because the president has said some truly horrible things like some of the people in power, right? Truly horrible things that then the people who do care, it's like they have to react in a very strong fashion to make it clear that that behavior is not tolerated, because it's not coming from above. You know what I'm saying? Like, I almost feel like if this situation happened and there was a different president in charge that was less hateful, that I don't know, would that situation have been handled differently? Would he have gone back and checked his words, because he knows it's not okay to say these sorts of things? I mean,
I think you might be right. I think there might be it's not an oversensitivity, I don't think, but like, I think people are now hypersensitive about like, look, we can't get rid of this fucker in the office. We're going to get everyone else out. Like,
well, or, you have to. Yeah, you got to clean house when you can. I mean, you got to you have to do something.
Well, also, too, I think that, you know, making TV or making films, I mean, or making music, it's all a collaborative environment. You're working with other people. And, you know, it's not like, you know, for these shows, I mean, if they let somebody go, I mean, they're letting them go, you know, for a reason of either they maybe they don't want them around or they don't want all the bad press that's going to be attached to it. But, yeah. I mean, you're seeing that. I mean, in my realm of music, the past couple weeks have just been, you know, utterly amazing with, you know, all the protests. And for some people, you know, it's like the you know, it's pulling back the curtain on some people who have some really pent up, not good views, who feel the need to share them and then get really angry when everyone else, you know, we're all musicians. You know, we are all, I play jazz music, which, you know, a few years ago, they said it should really be titled Black American Music. And everyone said, yes, that's exactly what it is. And over the past couple weeks, there's just been, you know, a couple, these stories of just, you know, you just think like, how could you have this profession and also have these views, because it's as if you haven't internalized anything of what you're doing. And, you know, just, yeah, same thing. Like, you know, these people have, you know, big endorsements with major music companies, everything, like they're literally dropped within minutes, you know? And I'm sorry, but it's just like, you know, that's what happened.
Yeah.
Gotta move on. So,
I'm glad, you know, it's funny. I was listening to the podcast. I was going to mention it later, but, Revisionist History, by Malcolm Gladwell. I'm listening back to some old episodes, and there's this thing, this phenomenon that when people do something good for the world, they get way worse because they think it's okay. So like they were talking about in the New Zealand, or sorry, in Australia, when they voted its first female prime minister, they became then super misogynistic. Like the same people who voted her in, they became like, said these horrible things. Like it almost as if they're like, look, I did something good, so now I can say whatever. I think it's a similar thing to when Obama was elected. So many people that voted, it gets this, they voted for him and then, well, that wasn't good enough. Now I'm voting Trump. Like what? Oh, because they feel like I did something good by voting this black person in. So they're all good. Now they can do almost any little racist thing that they want, where they tell themselves, well, I'm not racist. I voted for Obama. Like, well,
that was Mitch McConnell's comment like this morning, right? Or yesterday. There's not systemic racism in America because we voted for Barack Obama to be president.
The quote of the article said, we have paid our dues for slavery by voting in Obama. How does that make any sense? Tangent. I saw like the other craziest post today.
Yeah.
Is it okay? I saw, Taraji P. Henson. I saw on her Instagram, because she's really promoting mental health for the Black community. And, you know, she's got a foundation or funds for that anyway. But she had a picture and it was an African-American woman like breastfeeding a white baby. I think the pictures were from slave days. Right. Uh-huh. And so she had a few of them. But like one of them, she had her child on one side, black baby on one side, and then the white baby on the other side. And it said that the slave masters would say, you have to have one side only for the white baby and one side for the black baby. And you can't switch sides because then it's like them drinking out of the same water fountain. And we can't have that. And if you do that, you'll be whipped.
Wow.
I know I took us on a tangent, but I could not believe it when I read that. It's just like the fallacy and the logic of the thinking, not even just how inhumane and cruel and horrible it is, but it's also like, how freaking stupid are you? Like, what that they, it's like the same human body it's coming out of, but you're saying, well, this side is that side and that side is this.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to put logic on that.
No, exactly. Yeah. There's the some flawed logic, just like that Mitch McConnell comment. That's what brought me to it. Is like, so how do you even think?
My point on what I in telling you about that phenomenon, which is so it's a thing that, and it tends to happen when some country makes a big progressive move or something good, a big negative follows. Then that happens throughout history. And I'm wondering if right now we have the opposite having, like, a phenomenon where we did a real bad thing and so now we're trying to be really good, like trying to clean, you know, in some ways by letting a monster get elected like Trump. Now we're trying to okay, we got to fix everything now. Might be good. Maybe it's a good thing to do. But like Germany, they elected Hitler, right? And then they went. Now they're the leader of the free world. They've been so nice and good to everybody. They fixed their health. They fixed healthcare. They take care of everybody. Like, they're a really great country now because they did a really awful thing. You know, like, maybe the flip happens. That's where I was going. I don't know if I got there, but
I think on election day in 2016, my daughter, who at the time was in elementary school, and we're eating dinner and watching things happen and realizing it. And then, you know, I don't think they called it till later, but my daughter was in tears at one point, and her quote was, I'll always remember it. She said, "It's as if everything he said and did didn't matter." And I think that all this stuff, you know, the Me Too movement and you know, a lot of the stuff is just, it's just like enough, you know. I think all of us have just had enough. And you know, I will admit it, you know, 40-year-old white guy, you know, having a daughter, I mean, getting married and having a daughter, you see the world. I see the world differently now, obviously, than I did in my 20s. Never having that experience. And, you know, I feel fortunate to play music with a very diverse community of people and have seen different parts of the world and different countries. And, you know, I have relatives who've never left the country and never left the state by and large. And, you know, they have a very one-sided view. And I think that it's just like, it's for me, it's a very, you know, it's a time we watched, my wife and I finally had, our kids are around all the time now with being quarantined, but, you know, watching the Dave Chappelle, the full thing last night.
Yeah,
8:46, and the obvious internal rage that he's able to communicate to the audience, that's undescribable until you watch it, you know. And you know, I think I'm fed up. I can't even begin to understand, you know, what you guys, hopefully I can understand it, but I will never know. Right. It's just reality. But
this is a theory that I'm running with right now. I was saying, you know, I was like, you know, white people are really mad now. Like, I've never seen them so riled up about racism. And I think what happened is, you know, like about 6 weeks ago, when we got the video of, Ahmaud, who got shot and ran, you know, then, that weekend after we found out, all the white people were on Instagram running for him. They were jogging the mile and a half or whatever it was he was doing and doing that. And I think they thought they fixed racism. And then this happened. And now they're burning the shit down. They're like, "What? Wait, you didn't listen to us. No, we were ending racism." Like, I was actually complaining about that with a mile, everyone running for him. I was actually ironically telling my wife, I was like, you know, I get it. It's a gesture. They were like trying to show solidarity. But, you know, I'm fucking sick of these videos of them showing solidarity. I wish somebody would do something. Like, they need to do something more active. And then a month later, they just, you know, they're helping burn shit down. So I'm like, okay, I could have been more specific, you know, tone it down a little. It is nice to see everybody so mad, I guess.
It is. It's
to a degree. I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing. Like, on one hand, when I'm on Facebook and I see so many of my friends posting things and their outrage or what they could do to be better allies and this and that, it makes me very happy to be like, they got my back. Like, they care. Then there are some friends who I know they care, but they don't post anything. And it actually really hurts my feelings because I think, why aren't they posting anything?
Yeah.
But I know some of them I personally know, like, they're almost like family friends, like family to me. So I'm like, okay, well, that they're just not doing it in this fashion, but I know what they stand for.
Yeah.
But then there's also the flip side of it. Oh, I'm going to get emotional. I'm probably going to start crying, you guys. So,
it's okay.
You know, there's that.
It's just us. No,
because
one's listening.
It's because non-Black people are becoming aware now. It has made me realize that this is something that some people never had to deal with. Because my whole life, I always knew, like, you have to do this, Samantha. You have to do that, Samantha. You know, these sort of things that I have to do just because I have to do. It's just fact. It sucks. It shouldn't be that way, but it is that way. Even though I know it's easier on me because of, I'm, you know, mixed. And it can make things a little easier in that fashion because of stupid colorism. But anyway, I don't remember taking the time to question it. And now seeing all of my white friends get outraged, or most of them, I'm just like, holy shit, you never had to deal with this. Oh my God. Like, this is blowing your mind right now. Like, you lived your whole life and this is like, you can't wrap your mind around it because you never had to. Holy freaking crap. So it's eye-opening. But, you know, again, like, I know there's things I didn't know because every day I feel like I'm learning new information too. I just, you know, this past year found out about the Tulsa massacre, and that's like, how did I not know that? And it's horrible. And, you know, every day I'm learning something new. It's just, it's a freaking weird time.
I told Gretchen along your lines, I said last night, you know, I feel like I was getting gaslit for the last 30 years when I would tell people about racism. They're like, you know, this is racist. And they're like, no, it's not. No, it's not all racism. You can't say it's always race. Like, it's about race. And they're like, no, shit's been happening. I was like, I felt like people didn't believe. Like, they believe a little, but they'd be like skeptical about it. Cause like, this time me and my friend Hector were outside talking to his white girlfriend. And the cop just kept circling us, like, every like couple minutes I saw the same car come by, and we're like, son. And I was telling this to a police officer I worked with, and he's like, well, are you sure? Like, I mean, there could have been a lot of reasons, da, 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 da. And I'm like, I don't know. Just little instances like that that I bring up, and people would like be questionable on whether it was actually racism or not. And I feel like now they're all like, oh yeah, okay, I guess that was, you're right. I was like, I've been getting gaslit about my calling out racism for the last 30 years, saying it was all in my head, da da da. And now you all believe. Okay. That's what it took. Like, this, I don't know what it took, why it took that of all the things, but like, I think there was some element that people did really, even though they knew it wasn't true, that electing Obama ended racism, they didn't believe it. But I think maybe there is part of them that like thought, well, maybe though, like, right? Maybe there is a little part that did.
Yeah, I mean, I will admit it had me on that belief that things were far better than they were. You know, I was so focused on the progress. Like, I knew that racism still was out there. I just thought it was far less than what it actually still was.
Oh, yeah. I think it's way a little worse than I anticipated as well.
Oh, fun. Yeah. Fun.
I think that the thing that, I mean, like all of the current events, I think the thing for me that like the Central Park lady, right? The dog, the bird, the dog lady.
Yeah.
And you saw it, an actual case of like, you know, weaponizing the cops, right? You know, her intentional, you know, I don't remember the full quote, but essentially, you know, a black man is threatening me. There was a point to that. And, you know, it's kind of been out there that, you know, the way cops respond. And then, you know, you have like you saw where it starts when that happens. Like you could see there's a million things on the news of like how this would end, you know, and to see it's like he's the I forget the name of the guy, but he's head of the Bird Watching Association of Central Park, you know, or whatever. And, you know, they didn't have her dog on a leash. And my wife pointed out in the article, like his thing was, please leash your dog. And then she says no. And he says, well, if you're going to do what I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And he had dog treats that he would give the dog. And that's what set her off. That's what set her off, was giving her dog a dog treat. And then he could have died. But then, you know, so you had that instance. And then you had, you know, the whole point of like weaponizing the police. And then you had the police being weaponized, you know, a few days later. And that was just like enough.
That's a really good point too, though, about what it is that people are seeing now because of the things that people weren't seeing before. And it's kind of a little out of sight, out of mind, and, or how much do you see, like, how many hours of television or news or this or that are people seeing being told how black people are versus the little times where they might actually meet a black person if they don't, you know what I mean? If they don't have a lot of diversity, in their neighborhoods and stuff. But what that ultimately was bringing me to, if you haven't seen it yet, listeners, you guys as well, I highly recommend, I Am Not Your Negro documentary on Amazon Prime right now, because it was also enlightening to me too, like the depth of some of this stuff. And just you know, for some of the well-meaning white Americans that like are, you know, liberal or just human rights, care about people, but what they're seeing like the summer of fun or summer of love. And then the way that their summer looks versus all the things that are going on outside of their vision. And then, so when they get the information, they're just like, I'm not doing a good job, 'cause I'm trying to tell you without giving anything away. And so now I'm like sucking at it.
I saw they were talking about like 1967 was the summer of love for white people.
Yeah.
If you weren't white, 1967, not such a great year.
Yeah. Right. You see all the brutality and all of that, like horrible, horrible things happening on the other side.
Yeah.
That aren't being seen.
One point of note there, say, rather than weaponizing the police, which I would say that she was weaponizing her whiteness.
Yeah.
As Trevor Noah put it.
I still need to watch Trevor Noah. Yeah.
And speaking of whiteness, the PlayStation 5 is coming out, which is white. It's going to be white, which is the new thing.
Did they say? It looks like a new performing arts center. It does look like they took pictures of it and they put like landscaping around it, and it looks like your university's new performing arts center.
That's funny. It does. But PlayStation 5, it's out now. You can check it out online. The best, they've released some amazing games footage early on of games you can expect. It should be out somewhere in November, December. It's going to be fantastic. I'm there's a couple games that I absolutely love. Like one, there's a sequel to one called the original one was Horizon Zero Dawn. One of the best video games I've ever played. Female lead in it. Wonderful. And it's going to have a sequel. And I'm so excited. I'm so excited about it. It'll get it. That will get me to get the PlayStation 5. Just that game alone.
Samantha, do you play video games?
Not too many, but
Dig Dug.
Honestly, Dig Dug. When you said it looks like you're performing arts college or something, I was like, oh man, now I got to have this thing. I was like, I miss a performing arts
Matthew,
area.
Do you have a video game system?
I don't. My kids are really, they broke me in quarantine to get one. And I went to buy an Xbox and they're all sold out.
The country. Everyone is sold out.
Have you looked on OfferUp?
I've not. I've told my kids they're all sold out.
OfferUp doesn't exist, kids. What?
Technology went away for everyone, bought everything up. It was crazy.
And I believed you. See, that's how little I play video games. I was like, wow, they really did. Okay.
No, like, yeah, you can't buy an Xbox right now.
Now you can, I think.
They sold them, like Best Buy is sold out and Microsoft or Xbox.com is sold out. They have a new one coming up and they lowered the price. And I think now they're trying to get you to pay a monthly fee for the whole shebang. But
probably makes sense.
But maybe give me the elevator pitch, PlayStation or Xbox. What should I do?
Really, it's about the games that they would play, like what they're into, I think, because most games come out on both platforms.
Yeah.
Other than that, they're both kind of about the same. I ended up getting a PlayStation 4 because it was coming out with the Star Trek VR game, VR system game. And so I was like, I'm going to play that. So I need it. It was going to be a PlayStation exclusive. And I've really liked the PlayStation exclusives. The Spider-Man game, one of the best Spider-Man games ever done. It's amazing. It's like it is literally like I'm playing a little cartoon. Like, you know, it's halfway between cartoon and real, but like the story is so good. It's an amazing story.
It's like fun.
Yeah.
I should get a video game.
Yeah. PlayStation 4. They're both getting new systems are coming out, but it's going to be like a year or two before there's a lot of titles. So you'll still see a lot of PlayStation 4 coming out. One of which my last little bit of nerd news was a trailer dropped for PlayStation 4 game, Star Wars Squadron, it's called. So it's going to be like basically like 5-on-5 multiplayer possible, like dogfighting, X-Wings versus TIE fighters. It's going to be looks exciting. Like grab 4 friends, all get online together and just go fly ships. I doubt there'll be a VR mode for it because they didn't on this last thing, but oh my God, if there was, I'd be so happy just to be able to fly around and shoot things in VR, like in space. Oh, it'd be wonderful.
Well, speaking of Star Wars, you're going to go, we talked about this months ago because I went down to Disneyland over Christmas and did the Millennium Falcon ride, but the new ride had not opened yet. And then Corona happened and shut. And would you go back to Disneyland to do the new Star Wars?
I would go back ride? The second it opened, whether it's safe or not. But here's the thing. My big problem.
Wait, you're kidding, aren't you?
No. I will risk anything for that.
You must be kidding.
No, I will go. I would go down for that.
I'm going to keep saying you must be kidding until I brainwash you, not gaslight you, rightfully brainwash you into
a lot of Disneyland is outdoors. Okay, so safe. They're going to figure something out. Of all the places, I think Disney will figure out how to do things safely. Like they're great at hospitality. Anywho, my biggest fear of it is actually going there and not being able to get in. Like spending all the money to fly down and them, because I don't think when they open up, they're not going to be full capacity. And that makes me nervous to like, I'm going down for a weekend and hoping I can get in one of the days. Sounds so stressful.
Well, maybe they would do reservations or something.
Yeah,
they gotta be They don't do that.
I don't know, but
well, maybe after COVID.
I'm saying for the protocol.
First, I thought like, well, they're just gonna scalp. People will start scalping it, and it'll be horrible. But Disney's pretty tight about like, you buy a ticket, you have to show your ID. Like, this is you. You can't like take your ticket and sell it to someone next to you.
They take your photo. No, yeah. They take your photo when you come in, and they so that when you come the next day. Yeah. They scan your ticket and your photo comes up and they make sure it's you.
And if in case you do anything while you're in there, they want to know, they scan your ticket and like, oh, this is who it was. And they got you. Now you're banned from all Disney.
Yeah, if you send any, you know, unsavory text messages while you're there.
That's right.
To be out of there.
But I will go as soon as I can.
I meant to say tweets.
Tweets. Okay, that's fine. We know your technology is. We know you're a fine arts actor.
That's your focus. I was trying to do a callback, but I failed because I used the wrong word.
I got it. It was close enough if you didn't point it out.
Okay.
My final segment before we get into Matt. Here's a series of the week, a suggestion for streaming. I've mentioned on the show before, but I want to put it out there, highlight it. Working Moms on Netflix. I think it's one of the funniest, best, one of the best written shows on Netflix. It is created by Katherine Reitman. Yes, related to Ivan Reitman. It's a quick description. Working Moms follows the lives of four women as they juggle love, careers, and parenthood. It is so funny. And yes, yeah, it opened up with them all, you know, seeing boobs in the first 2 seconds, but they're breastfeeding. So it was like, it was okay. It was natural. But it was like, first off, I was like, I've never seen this on TV. Like, just moms being moms, like just dealing with it. So it was kind of shocking. But then, and then they were also just like cussing. Like, I was like, whoa. The only representation of moms are just not aggressive. And when I'm saying cursing, I'm like, I'm full on TVMA swearing nasty stuff. Right. But it was so funny. And then I just kept watching because they're on season four now. Yeah. Season four hasn't been my favorite, but it's solid. It's still solid. One of the best written films. Either of you watched it? Watched one?
No, I'm going to add it to the list now. Thanks.
I watched a few. I think you tweeted. You use the wrong word. What do you call posted about it on
posted
Facebook?
Posted about it. Yeah.
That was a couple of years. It was like after we did the film, I think. So okay. I watched a few.
Yeah, didn't get hooked in like me.
No.
Yeah, it's okay. It's the institutional misogyny. That's probably why.
I did start watching The Good Life. Also on your recommendation, which
how do you like it?
I was surprised that it was good. And no slight against Silas. Wait, it's just good life? Good Place. Good place. Okay. What's
the point? I knew what you meant.
Okay.
Sorry.
I was like, is there another show?
I have The Good Life. No, The Good Place. Because is there anything on, there's hardly any comedies on network TV that are any good.
Yeah.
And I was surprised that it was like, there was, you know, some jabs in there and some really smart jokes.
How far did you get in it? Like, how far are you in?
I probably got 6 episodes into the first season, but honestly, it was late at night, so I fell asleep after somewhere in the 5th, so I have to go back and catch up. But
did you get to the twist?
No.
Oh.
I don't. Okay. I just started, but okay. I was having to, research a couple musical styles and checking out some network comedy. And like, I was like, man, this is just not.
Okay. You know what?
It's plain.
First 5-6 episodes, I was like, all right, that's all right. It's all right. And then there's a moment that happens on it. And then you're like, what? And it's so good from that moment on. I realized what it was like. I was like, oh my God, This is even better than I thought it was. Okay, not spoiled. You haven't seen it, Samantha?
I watched a couple episodes. But I just like couldn't get into it to keep watching. But I know it's probably something I'm going to come back to.
I was watching for my daughter, basically. And then you got, because she was watching it and I wanted to see what she kept talking about. And then I then there's a point that I was like, this is what she was talking about. Okay.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
On the subject of streaming, I just downloaded. Do any of you have the Quibi app? Is that how you say it?
I know about that. It, but I don't have it. I haven't tried yet.
It's the 10-minute shows that you stream on your phone only. Oh,
cool. Yeah.
But they're.
I'm glad they're finally making some content for a inferior viewing experience.
The funny thing was, because I mean, there's so much, they had like $1.5 billion of funding, right? And it's meant so that you watch it while you commute to work, and it debuted instead of in April.
I was thinking, wait, people are on trains and stuff, or maybe carpooling,
or kids going to school, or kids in between class and college. It was branded millennials. Yeah. TV for millennials, but then the virus hit and everyone's staying at home, so no one's on their phone. No one's watching. You just watch the TV, Netflix or whatever. Yeah. So, but yeah, I've checked out a few shows and it's stuff
like
that's,
it. Would you what, say download the app? Download it.
Well, I think I have the. I'm like 2 days into the 14-day trial. I don't think I'll continue, but it's kind of like stuff that. Wouldn't have made it onto TV, but it's some big stars.
Don't forget to cancel and start charging.
Yes.
So Matt, I met you for the 48-hour film project, and you were the composer, of course, for the music there. It was a nice surprise, like getting a, I didn't know you were a jazz musician, I think, then. But I was like, and I think I was like, yeah, I want something jazzy. Like, I think that's like the kind of the music. And I was like, oh, turns out that's what you do.
I usually keep that under wraps because there's nothing worse than going into a film music pitch to say, yeah, I'm a jazz musician.
Why is that?
Most people don't like jazz. Really? It's just that simple. Oh yeah. I mean,
do most people not understand the roots of jazz are
correct, or
that everything else is rooted from jazz?
Correct.
Like,
yeah, no, they don't. I don't think, I mean, some people do, but I mean, I think it's a well-rounded, background that's required to be that. And I think in a way, I mean, the heart of jazz music is, improvisation. And I think composing, especially in the realm of film, is like that too. So that when, you guys, I got the cut for the film, I think at 8 a.m. on a Sunday, knowing that I had to get it back to you by 3 p.m. on a Sunday.
Yeah.
And you have this moment of just like, oh shit, what am I going to do? And then you just like, bang something out, and yeah, that works. So that was a start. If you remember, we met at Starbucks. That was the first time.
Oh yeah.
We met, you and I met in person to bring this episode full. But I think you might be on the do not watch list. But yeah, actually I revisited the film the other day, to put in my reel.
Yeah.
And I did a separate comedy reel too. And that the first scene with Manny and Samantha at the car, and I think my favorite line of that opening thing was, Samantha, your line of, what service? 5 stars.
Thanks.
I love that line. But
I should let me look that back up again. Thank you. Yeah. I got to update some stuff.
But I think I've done a couple of the 48-hour ones. And I have to say, that was the most smooth run, fun experience. And I think that's the everyone finished early and we did it, and I got to do the slate on set when I showed up for a little bit. Oh yeah,
that's right. That's right.
Yeah. So that was really cool.
It's nice to hear that it seemed like it was running smooth to some folks. Like, I guess, especially if you had done some before, right?
Yeah.
48. So I think it's funny. I think of 48, it didn't seem like it was running smooth to someone who hadn't done one before. There was someone on the set that I heard about, like, it was like making some cracks about stuff. And like, I remember having to explain to somebody like, no, it's just slow in the beginning. And then we're going to start ramping up and it'll be good and we'll be done. And nobody believes me that I'm like, no, I'm going to sleep tonight. No, I don't.
Yeah,
I don't do that thing. I'm too old for that crap.
I was just going to interrupt you to compliment you because, yeah, I mean, because I got to work on, you know, the last two with you, and I know I mentioned to you that I definitely saw a jump in the growth from the first one to the second one, and just how, like, you were, how, you know, everything, you were more prepared. You grew as a director. Not saying you were bad the first time, but it was just like, I saw the growth, which was exciting. But then also because I know we were writing it the night before, and I knew that you were doing more writing after I left our session. And so I knew how freaking exhausted I was when I showed up. Cause we were writing it.
I thought we finished before.
We did finish it before we filmed, but we were writing it the day before we filmed.
Yeah, but I thought we finished by the time you left that night.
I thought that you were doing, maybe we did finish by the time I left, and maybe you, okay.
I still had stuff to do. I had a storyboard. Yeah,
okay, maybe
stuff,
that's what it was. I knew you still had more stuff to do. Like, I was just going to go home and sleep and get ready for like the acting in the morning, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, man, however tired I am, Silas has had even less sleep because he has even more to do. It was just really a kudos for you on that.
Theater and film are probably the things I can do when I'm tired and not feel it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, so, it's pretty much the only time I'll wake up happily at 4 o'clock in the morning and be like, let's go.
As much as I love the compliments on me. Matt, so
yeah, sorry.
How did you get into film composing? Was this like as a child, were you like, I want to be John Williams? Or like,
yeah, what? everyone has those, like, you listen to all the composers talking, yeah, they all have those seminal moments. And I was like, yeah, nah, not for me. So I grew up here in Seattle, and I started drumming, playing the drums late, in ninth grade in high school, which is kind of late to get a start. But anyway, and then I went to, and I really wasn't even good. And then I went to Shoreline Community College here in Shoreline for a couple of years, and I got into the band. I always tell the story. The summer I did my dad signed me up for a big band Tuesday night class at Shoreline Community College, the summer between high school and college. And I still remember it. So we start playing. I was the only drummer in there. We start playing, and immediately the band director comes over while the whole band is playing and I'm playing. And he goes into my ear and he says, I can tell you have no idea what you're doing. But it's okay. He's like, it's okay, we'll figure it out. And so I like basically crammed for like 8 weeks, and then I got into the jazz band there, and I met my friend Tom Abbs, who played bass. And then the second year of college, I thought I was going to go to like film school or something, USC. And then my friend Tom moved to New York to go to the New School for Jazz Contemporary Music. And he's like, you should come too. And then I was like, okay. And then I moved out to New York when I was 19 and hung out and went to school and then played gigs and got out of school and got a job at Starbucks and kept playing, you know, part-time so I get health insurance. We already talked about that. Then I, you know, just played gigs, and I was in New York for 10 years. And during that time, my old drum teacher, who I was still really good friends with, started this record label called Origin Records in Seattle. And then I helped out and then just kind of kept hanging out and became a vital part of that. And then I moved back to Seattle in 2002 and Origin Records. Then we started the Ballad Jazz Festival. So I've always been in this music kind of world. So I've had all these jazz records out. And then I went, I never finished my undergrad degree, and I found I was doing a little bit of producing. I produced a lot of records. Origin Records put out like 600 records, and we do the jazz festival. So I'm used to like producing and chaos and just managing all this stuff and making records really, really inexpensively. And so, I was producing like commercials, like music for Olive Garden commercials and couple soundtracks here and there. And I started doing this online program through the school in England, and then they had a master's program. And the great thing about European colleges is they have an entry point that if you can make it in, you can kind of, I was able to go into a master's program having not done a bachelor's degree because I had the life experience and professional credit and all that stuff. Nice, so I got one of two spots available. Ooh. And so I did it, and it was about composing for TV, movies, and video games. And then I started doing that after that. So I think yours like, was,
oh, I'll go back to Seattle.
No, I was back. Here in the time. That was all. It was all done online. So I was in Seattle, okay. The funny thing was I had so the 48-hour they have the cocktail party. So you know we did the first. It might have been your. No, it was the first 48-hour film competition I did. They have kind of a week before they had a gathering, and. I tell this to my students and, you know, drum students. It's like, how do you get work? It's like, you just got to go hang out, right? I'm sure it's same being a comic. You got to be out and be seen. And so the 48-hour film, they said, hey, everyone come down. We're going to have cocktail hour. And I forced myself to go mingle, and I show up, and there's like no one there I know. So it was like my biggest fear of walking into a room of complete strangers. Okay, yeah. Now I have to try and mingle. And I talked to a few people, and one of them was my friend Michael, who was working with one of the other teams. But he was an editor down at Channel 9, and through him, I got hooked up with doing music for Channel 9, and that kind of led to doing music for KUOW Seattle Now podcast and just all kinds of cool stuff. So, and then we got hooked up, and we did the GA soundtrack, and the rest is history.
The rest is history. And now GA's launched you into so much, right?
Like, hey, it's on the reel. Yeah, I had to submit for a comedy thing, and I was like, you know, there's some good because comedy is the hardest to write. I was terrified the night that you were texting about like what we got and here's the script. Yeah,
yeah. Well, and I kind of knew we would do
side conversation. Conversation. I was just thinking, we didn't ever put out an IMDb, did we?
Oh shoot, I got to do that. Yep, I'll get on that. Dang it.
Sweet. It's okay. I'll try to remind you. I'm revamping mine. That's why I was like, update some stuff.
I'll look up my password. coming soon to IMDb. That way the film never, you know, it's never done because I'm never finished. Still adding stuff to it. Okay, cool. Hey, so first time someone comes on, I like to ask them some questions. So right now I call them the seven questions, but one day I want to get a new one on it. And my clue to it is whenever Samantha starts stretching. So
sorry, this like, back thing is still like it's hard to sit down for long periods
and
right
then
now.
Then I realize my back hurts, and then I'm like, okay, seven questions. They're not tough, but what are you most nerdy about?
I mean, probably music. To say
music,
jazz music, which yeah, which is great at cocktail parties. I'm sure. Yeah,
it's okay. What's something that you love to eat?
Chips and salsa.
What's something that you love to drink?
At the moment, it's red wine.
Okay.
What kind?
What do you mean?
What at the kind moment? Of red wine?
Like yeah, the kind of red wine. It's I don't know what it is, but it's at the end cap at the QFC on 145th and 15th. And it's $8.99 a bottle. And it's great.
So the high quality stuff. Okay. What kind of music do you love? Is there obviously it's jazz, but what's anything specific?
I will say the Beatles' White Album was the album that I fell in love with that really kind of changed my life.
Hmm. What do you love to create?
I mean, I will say I like to create art. And I do a few things. I mean, I run a jazz festival and, I do some graphic design stuff here and there, and then I make music and I view all of those as the same thing. It's like creating something. I like to create stuff.
What's a game you love to play?
Can I say baseball with my kids? Sure. Would be the thing at the moment.
In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
Making this existence a bit better for some, you know, people, anyone that you touch.
Okay.
Can I just add one more story? Yeah.
It's the last one.
I mean, all of us, right? All of us are perform and do stuff and try and come up with original stuff. And I just went through a period of kind of pitching on a couple projects. Sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't. And I tell people it's easy to get discouraged. And I remember one time me and my business partner, John Bishop, we had Origin Records, and we're just kind of, it's one of those moments where you're just like sitting around like, why are we doing this? Really? Is this all worth it? And then the mail came and we got this letter that somebody wrote from some country in Eastern Europe. I don't remember. I probably should make a better story. But, you know, it was this, the guy wrote this letter saying how much he liked the records and he felt bad because he didn't, you know, it's the exchange rate. He couldn't buy that many. But it was just like this guy took the time to write a letter, put it in the mail. That mail went all the way across the ocean and arrived there. And I always remember that because, you know, that's the thing. I think, you know, for all of us, whether you're a comedian, musician, actor, whatever, it's like you could have like 99 rejections, but then you get that one thing and you're like, oh yeah, I can make it through another 99 rejections now. So, you know, it's like when you actually, you can create art that people respond to, that's what I want to be remembered by.
Awesome. All right, Mac Jorgensen, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Okay. Pleasure, both of you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, black and a half. Live long and prosper.